Okay, I'm not sure how many of you know that today is actually a fast day that is recorded on the page in Shulchan Aruch. So don't worry, you don't have to stop drinking or eating whatever during for worry if you ate during breakfast at all. But there is, the Magen Avraham writes on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, that Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas is a fast day. The Magen Avraham says that when they had burnt the many cartonloads of Gemaras, and they saw this as a gezerah min hashemayim, they did a Sheilas Chalom, and the Chacham of the generation did a Sheilas Chalom, or whatever it was in the 13th century, and they were told. The answer they got, I don't know what a Sheilas Chalom is or how you do one, but they did one. And they asked Min HaShemayim, why this happened. And they were told three words, which was a targum of, they were told the three words, just a moment. They were told three words, Dog Zeras Oraisa, which is the targum on the words, Zos Chukas HaTorah. And they realized that if the response as to why a tragedy happened was Dog Zeras Oraisa, the targum of Zos Chukas HaTorah, they realized that the commemoration of the tragedy should not just be on the date of the year that it happened, but it should have something to do with the parsha. It should have something to do with Parshas Chukas. And therefore, they were koveya Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas as a fast day. So it's recorded in Shulchan Aruch that in the Magen Avraham, at least, that Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas was a fast day. Now the question is, what exactly is the connection between the parsha, between Chukas and the tragedy of the burning of many Jewish books? We say Kiddush for on Tishba, it was a great tragedy. We know that prior to a printing press, the burning of nowadays it would be tragic if holy Svarim were burnt. But prior to a printing press, it was a loss that was that you couldn't recover from. It was something that you couldn't, it was a pseida de lo hadar. It was something that you couldn't easily replace. There are some things in life that are replaceable and other things that are not. I was just reading last night in Rabbi Bender's book of Shmuzin, that he said that Rabbi Bender, unfortunately, when he was 16 years old, his father died very suddenly. He went to learn in the Philadelphia Yeshiva, and he spent one zman there, and then his father died, and he had to go and be with his mother. He couldn't leave his mother home as an almana alone, so he switched to learn by the Mir Yeshiva and Tar Vidas, I don't remember which one first, in Brooklyn, so that he could live at home. He could live in Williamsburg in his mother's home. He said, while they were in Shiva for his father, who had died very suddenly. And they were all exhausted from the Shiva. Friday night, they went to sleep early. They got to try to get a good night's sleep because they were so tired. And he said they woke up in the morning, and the kids woke up first, and they went downstairs, and they saw that the entire house was ransacked. That svarim were thrown all over the place. Everything was everywhere. And he realized that someone had broken in the middle of the night and robbed them, of whatever little possessions they had. And knowing the terrible financial situation they were in, not having a breadwinner anymore, and the mother having to fend for herself, it was like insult to injury, to see that. And then he was waiting for his mother, he and his sisters waiting for his mother to walk down the stairs, and they didn't know how she was going to handle it, and the kids were crying, and the mother walked down the stairs, and she said, Kindelach, we don't cry for things that can be replaced. Meaning, whatever they took, that's something that could be replaced. We don't cry for things that could be replaced. Meaning, they had just experienced a real pseida de lo hadar, so we don't cry for things that can be replaced. But the truth is, we sometimes do, right? Meaning, if svarim rachman al son were burnt today, we would cry for that also, even though they can be replaced just by hitting print again. But because there's a kedusha to the svarim themselves, but it was catastrophic in those days, and as a result of that, they made a gezerah of a fast day on Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. So the question is, what exactly is the connection between Parshas Chukas that they daf dafka had to link this fast day, not like every other fast day on the calendar is based on a date on the calendar, right? Asar b'teves, Tisha b'av, Shiva asar b'tamuz, right? They're identified by the date on the calendar, and even the ones that are called something else are, you know, have a date on the calendar, right? So why is it that this one does not have a date on the calendar? It's specifically Erev Shabbos, Parshas Chukas. Additionally, Parshas Chukas starts with what we know of as Parshas Para, which is the Parsha of the Para Aduma, and we read it every single year, which is also a little bit strange, meaning unfortunately we don't really need to know much about Para Aduma nowadays, because we don't have Para Aduma, we don't have the ability nor real need to be mitar ourselves from Tumas Meis, meaning there's nothing that we can't do because of our Tumas Meis that we otherwise would have been able to do. When there's a Beis HaMikdash, sure there is, then being Nichnas Li'Azara is something that we would not be able to do if not as a Tamei Meis, but we're not, you know, Harabais, you can't go even with Tumas Ziva or Nida, but you can go in Harabais with Tumas Meis even, so most of us don't do that. But you know, there's very little that we're limited from. Why is it that we put so much emphasis on Parshas Parah? In addition to that, the Chacham Mikol Adam Chazal tell us Shlomo Melech said about Parah Aduma Amarti Yachkema V'hi Rechoka Mimeni, that I thought I was so smart, but it's distant from me. So clearly, Hashem didn't really want anyone to understand Parah Aduma. So you know, Kodesh Baruch Hu sort of makes a point that whatever you do understand in Torah in life is really only by the grace of God, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you the intellectual capacity to understand certain things, and therefore, no matter how brilliant and sharp your mind might be, you're only going to understand exactly what Hashem enables you to understand. So that's a great, great lesson in humility, to realize that however smart you are, however much you're able to chap, however sharp your mind might be, however strong the kashas you ask might be, but to realize that's a gift. That's something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you. But one might ask that, granted, it's a critical lesson in humility, and it's a yesod, it's true. You're only going to understand what Hashem wants you to understand, and a person's abilities, intellectual abilities, are purely a gift from God. What we do with them is up to us. Why does Hashem teach that lesson specifically in the context of Parah Aduma? He could have made a chok that relates to any of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah that would be equally perplexing, that would be equally not understandable, and yet he chose Parah Aduma as the place to make that point. He could have made that point anywhere. He could have made something that Shlomo HaMelech didn't understand about any din in the Torah, about lulav. He could have made a point that Shlomo HaMelech didn't understand about tefillin, about anything, about any din in the Torah. Why does he choose Parah Aduma, the technical way that one is mitayer himself from Tumas Meis? Why not mikvah, right? Why Parah Aduma? Is that the place HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to make this point of Amarti Yachkma V'Yiruchoka Mimeni, that no matter how smart you are, you'll understand exactly what Hashem wants you to understand and no more? Why is this the quintessential chok? So the Torah says, Ushmartim vasisem ki hi chachmaschem uvinaschem le'ine ha'amim asher yishmun es kol ha'chukim ha'ele v'amu rak am chacham v'navon ha'goy ha'gadol hazeh. That when we observe the Torah, the nations of the world are going to say, wow, what a brilliant, advanced, sophisticated, deep understanding a nation the Jewish people are. They will admire us for our sophistication and our depth because we observe the Torah, because we keep the mitzvos. And that is the assumption that the Chumash makes. Not the assumption, it's what the guarantee that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. You keep the Torah and you will be admired for it. Contrast that with the following. Rashi writes when it comes to Parah Aduma, Lefisha Satan v'umos ha'olam monenes Yisrael lomar, ma ha'mitzvah zos, umatam yeshba, because the Satan and the umos ha'olam are going to mock us, and they're going to say, what is this mitzvah? What's the reason for it? Lefichach kasav b'chukah, that's why it says chukah, gzerihi milafanai vein lecha reshus laharer achareha, that it's a gzera, and we can't be maharer achareha. Now, how do we reconcile that Rashi with the pasuk in Chumash that tells us that when the Umas Olam see us observe the Torah, they will be full of admiration for us? Rashi says, no, they won't. If they can't understand it, they are going to mock us. They are going to make fun of us. They're going to say, what's this all about? This is ridiculous. Meaning the Parah Aduma apparently promises the exact opposite of what the Torah, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises about observance of the Torah in general. Now, the rule in personal growth and in Tikkun HaMidos that the Rambam sets forth for us is a very, very well-known rule, and it's extremely effective. And that is, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos that if a person wants to change a particular Mida, he should go to the other extreme. Right? The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva that if a person wants to change a particular Mida, he should go to the other extreme. If a person, let's say, is too stingy, he should train himself to be overly generous, to just give way more than a normal person would give. And then hopefully he'll find some equilibrium, he'll find some balance where he's doing the Ratzon Hashem. So essentially, what we're supposed to do is practice being what you want to be, and then you'll become what you're striving to be. Meaning, but over-practice, to over-correct. So if you act like you've already changed, then you're going to be able to change. It's kind of a fake it till you make it kind of approach, which is a great approach. That if you know what you want to do, whether you're feeling it, whether you're, you know, what if someone asks, you know, Rabbi, what should I do? I don't feel like putting on tefillin today. So what's the answer? Put on tefillin. I didn't ask you to feel it. Put on tefillin. Eventually, maybe you'll feel it as well. Meaning, you got to do the mitzvos, and then if you feel that you have a failure, and you know, someone asked me recently that question about tefillin, that I really struggle with tefillin. So what should I do? So buy tefillin for a yasom who can't afford tefillin. Make a new kabbalah not to talk in your tefillin. Meaning, go to it, lean into tefillin harder, lean in even more. You go to the other extreme, and then hopefully you'll find a place where you have a healthy relationship with tefillin. So the Ber Yosef, Rav Yosef Zundel Salant, has a beautiful piece in the beginning of this week's Parsha where he answers all of these questions that we raised. I already lost count how many questions there were, but he answers all of these questions with a basic yesod. The Ber Yosef is... I would say, I don't know if you're allowed to have favorites for him. The Gemara in Erevin says you're not supposed to say Shmuazu na, Shmuazu enina, that I like this piece of Torah, not that piece of Torah. But if you're allowed to have a favorite sefer on Chumash, the Ber Yosef is it, for me at least. Each piece is just so, and I'm not alone. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach felt the same way. I don't know if it was his favorite sefer, but Rav Shlomo Zalman used to attend Rav Yosef Salant's drushas, and he told him, he encouraged him to put it in writing. He said, these drushas are spectacular, and they need to be written up. And that's how the Sefer Be'er Yosef came about. So, it's often said that Rav Shlomo Zalman and I have similar taste. So the Be'er Yosef develops the following yisod, that Hashem gave us a halacha that trains us to accept that we don't understand everything. And by following this halacha, which even Shlomo HaMelech couldn't comprehend, we're going to grow accustomed to following the details of every halacha, whether we understand them or not. We'll become comfortable with the idea, with the notion, with the concept that you don't need to understand everything in order to do it. And maybe the most appropriate context within which to learn this is when one encounters death. Parah Aduma is about an encounter with death. A person became tamei lemeis. Very often, when there is a sense of loss, when there is death, when there is tragedy, a person is left with a lot of questions. I don't understand. Great people are left with a lot of questions. I don't understand why Hashem did this. Why did Hashem take this? I know of a very, very great Rebbetzin, married to perhaps the Gadol Hadar, who said to me once about her sister who had passed away at a young age, that all she did was kibbutz ave'im to the highest degree. why did Hashem take her and not me? Why did Hashem, of the two sisters, she was the one that was L'man yarichun yamecha of kibud aveim? Why? Great people have that question. When we encounter tragedy, when we encounter death, we don't have answers. We have lots of questions. So what do we do about it? So the HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to train us, specifically in the context of an encounter with death, that you can get used to doing things and accepting things even though you don't understand them. Essentially, Chukas HaTorah is there to prepare us for Chukos HaChayim. That life comes with many Chukim as well. There are lots of things about life that we don't understand. And the more we acquaint ourselves and make ourselves comfortable with the idea that we don't understand everything in Torah, Torah is a reflection of life. We will become more accepting of the fact and humble to the point where we'll understand that we cannot understand. If we're to feel that we have to understand everything, then we're going to try to answer the unanswerable. And with this, Rav Yosef Salant explains the Gemara Menachos. Gemara Menachos says that B'Sha'a Sha'ala Moshe Lamarom, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to receive the Torah, Ra'a Kadosh Baruch Hu Shekosher K'sharim La'usios. He saw Kadosh Baruch Hu putting crowns on tops of the letters. So Moshe Rabbeinu asks, Mi ma'akev al yadcha? What are you doing? What do we need? We don't need the fancy stuff. Just give us the words of the Torah. We're ready for it. Just give it to me and I'll take it down to the Jewish people. And then Hashem says, no. Adam Echad Yesh, who's going to live Besof Kamadoros. There's a guy that's going to live in many generations from now, Akiva ben Yosef Shemei. And his name is Akiva ben Yosef. And he's going to darshan Tile Tilim Shalalachos from these crowns on tops of the letters. And the Gemara continues, Amar Lefanav, Ribono Shalolam, Har Ehuli. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ribono Shalolam, I want to see this guy. Amar Lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Chazor La'acharecha. You need to turn your back, or turn toward the back, whatever it means. Halach V'yashav B'sof Shmona Shuros. Moshe Rabbeinu was transported into Rabbi Akiva's classroom, and he was sitting Besov Shmona Shuros at the end of the eighth row of Rabbi Akiva's classroom. Now the Gemara tells us that the way they used to sit in Limud HaTorah is the same way they used to sit by the Sanhedrin. The Mishnayos and Sanhedrin describe that the Sanhedrin would sit, and then there were three rows of alternates for the Sanhedrin, and they would sit in order of greatness. So if you were if you were number one, so then you were the next up to that if someone had to bail from the Sanhedrin or died or whatever, you'd be the next one up, and then everyone would move over one seat because it was in order of greatness. I had a Rebbe in second grade that used to do that. They used to rank all the Talmidim every single day in order of best to worst. So that was, I'm not even that old. I mean, I guess I am that old. That used to be acceptable. And it was like a big deal. Like when he's up to like number 32, like the 32nd best guy out of a 32 person classroom, everyone would like laugh and smile and make fun of the kid. And like, it was great. It was great. So, Chinuch 101, it's fantastic. But they used to sit in order of greatness. And Moshe Rabbeinu, where did he land in Rabbi Akiva's classroom? Besov Shmona Shuros. He was in the last seat in Rabbi Akiva's classroom. And the Gemara says, V'lo ha'yodea mahein omrim. You ever sitting in a shir thinking, I have no clue what he's talking about, what the Magid Shir is talking about, right? We've all been there. Moshe Rabbeinu was there. Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting in Rabbi Akiva's shir thinking, this is so above my head. I remember the first time I heard Rav Shachter, I was in 11th grade. Our Rabbi Hech took us to, he should be well, never Rabbi Hech took us to Rav Shachter. He said, you have to just hear, you have to hear how Gadol gives a shir. And I had no clue. I just knew it was a lot, it was fast, and I had no clue. Zero. So there are many times that you find yourself in that. Moshe Rabbeinu found himself in that situation. And how did he feel about it? The way we all feel about it. Tashash Kocho, he felt small, he felt weak, he felt like... But for Moshe Rabbeinu, it must have been much, much worse, because he's the one who brought us the Torah. He's the one that was charged with it. And now he doesn't understand the Torah as well as some guy that lives many generations later. Tashash Kocho, he was very weak, he was very distraught. Kivan sheyigil ledavar echad. Then they got to a certain topic in the shir, and Omer lo talmidim. The talmidim said to Rabbi Kiva, Rebbe, minayin lach? Prove this. How do you know that this is true? What you're saying? So Omer lahen, he responded, halacha l'moshe misinai. How do I know it's true? It's halacha l'moshe misinai. Ah, nesiyash v'dayto. Moshe Rabbeinu says, he needs me. He needs me to transmit halacha l'moshe misinai. Even he wouldn't know it. So he was calmed down. Chazor b'alvnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then Moshe Rabbeinu came back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amar l'fanav, and he said, Ribono shel olam, yesh lecha adam kazeh v'ata nosin Torah al yaday? There's going to be a person of this caliber, and you chose me to give the Torah? Why not just wait a few more generations and give it through him? So Amar lo, Hashem says to Moshe, shtok, quiet, kach ola b'machshava l'fanai. This is what was ola b'machshava, this is what I thought to do. Amar l'fanav, he said, Ribono shel olam, hariseini toraso. You've shown me his Torah, and it's remarkable. Hareini scharo. Now I'd like to see the schar he gets for that kind of Torah. Let's see what happens to him at the end of his life. So Amar lo, chazor l'acharecha. Kodesh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, buckle up. Chazor l'achorav. So he turns back, ra'a sheshoklin b'saro b'makulin. And he sees that they're scraping the skin off of Rabbi Akiva's body with these iron combs. Amar lefanav, ribono shel olam, zo Torah v'zo schara. This Torah, that's the end, that's the schar that he gets. Amar lei, shtok, kach ala b'machshava lefanai. Be quiet, that's what was ala b'machshava, that's what I thought to do. Now, first of all, so many problems with it. First of all, why did it help Moshe Rabbeinu tiyar halacha l'moshe misinai? It was a gaiva thing? It was like, now he needs halacha l'moshe misinai. Is that really the way you think of Moshe Rabbeinu? Second of all, how did the experience with Rabbi Akiva help Moshe? Meaning, how did this help him understand anything? So the Bar Yosef says that Moshe Rabbeinu was first bothered. How could it be that there are parts of Torah that I don't understand? How could it be that Hashem gives me the Torah and I'm sitting in a classroom and I don't understand parts of Torah? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, because there are going to be things in life that you don't understand. Meaning the two conversations are linked to one another. They're put together for a reason. Right after Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't understand the Torah and he goes through that whole halacha l'moshe misinai experience sitting in the back of Rabbi Kiva's classroom, that there are certain things that have no explanation and just is, and you have to accept it. Right in that context, Hashem shows him the tragic death of Rabbi Akiva. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't understand. And Hashem says, exactly. Meaning the point is, kach ola b'machshava lefanai. I had this conversation with you, and I've set up the Torah in a way where there are certain things that you can't understand so that you will grow accustomed to the idea that there are things that you can't understand. And there, the death of Rabbi Akiva is among those things that you are not meant to understand. Even Rabbi Akiva has to say halacha l'moshe misinai about certain things. When Moshe sees Rabbi Akiva's gruesome death, so he's bothered. But Hashem says, kach ola b'machshav lefanai. The reason I just had the conversation with you about Chukos HaTorah is to model for you that just as you don't understand the Chukos HaTorah, there are also Chukos HaChayim that we're incapable of understanding. So, comes along the Magen Avraham in Siman Tav Kuf Pei, and he quotes the Minhag Yisrael to fast today, Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukos, because 24 wagon loads of Svarim were burnt, and they had a Shelas Chalom, and they got the response, Dog Zeras Araisa. What's the connection to Parah Aduma? Because Parah Aduma is the Parsha of tragedy. It is the Parsha of how to deal with tragedy with Emunah. That a person doesn't look for answers. We're generally discouraged from even asking those kinds of questions. Tisha B'Av, Rav Soloveitchik writes, Tisha B'Av, we have a Rishus to ask. So we're allowed to say Eicha on Tisha B'Av. And we have Kino, so we say Eicha, Eicha on Tisha B'Av. But we don't expect answers to questions. And that is what a maimon is. That a person is able to appreciate the gzeirihim ilfanai ve'in l'cha rishus l'harher achareha. That when it comes to specifically this area of Torah, this is meant to train us about how to think about life in general, about how to be a maimon. So it's a time of the year where what one is supposed to work on a sense of emunah. A lot of times people have the impression that emunah is like a yes or no. You know, are you a mamin? Well, if I believe there's a God, then I'm a mamin. If I don't believe a God, then I'm not a mamin. like most things in life, it's not black and white. It's not yes or no. It's how big of a maimin are you? How much bitachon do you have? Right? How advanced? Just like, you know, you can't say, oh, does this guy know how to learn or not? He knows how to learn, or he doesn't know how to learn. Yes or no? It's not a yes or no. What, you know, he can learn this and can't learn at that level. He can learn at that level, but not at a different level. So the same is true with emunah and bitachon. These are things that that a person has to work on throughout their lives. And this is the parsha that that reminds us of the great value of emunah, and that how a person can go through life with a certain sense. There's a certain sense of tranquility that a person can have when they know that they're not supposed to know everything. You know, it's like when a soldier goes on a mission and there are like 15 different moving parts on that mission, and he doesn't know what those parts are. He doesn't know what his role is, but he just knows I have to do this, and I don't know where it fits in the bigger picture. The IDF went to rescue some hostages, they got some live hostages out. So there was a mission that happened on Shabbos. I think it happened on Shabbos that they were able to get some hostages. I remember there was an Israeli guy that lives across the street from my shul. He's a sweet guy, and he comes to Kabbalah Shabbos in the shul all the time. He doesn't know about Malachos Shabbos so much. So, you know, like we see him gardening on Shabbos and whatever, doing all, like he does like all Amitas Malachos on his lawn as we're all walking to shul. He's like winnowing, and he's so when the IDF rescued hostages on Shabbos, he wrote a sign, hostages, and he put it on the shul door so that we could all know what had happened. So Rav Shechter's son-in-law was part of the mission. What was his part of the mission? He was supposed to blow something up somewhere, right? And he didn't know why, he didn't know what, he was just told, do this. So he went and he blew something up somewhere. Turned out that was the decoy that was supposed to bring certain Hamas people to that location so that they could free up, meaning, he had no idea. What am I doing over here? It turned out that it was big things. It turned out that it was some, you know, what he was accomplishing was something very big. A person has to. There's a certain comfort that we know that there's a bigger picture, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, and that we don't have to understand everything. Rabbi Razin just told me the other day, the name of Rav Yitzchak Kohn, the word da'aga has. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, except for the Beis, right? It has Aleph, Gimel, Dalet, and Hey in the word. Without bitachon, without the Beis, without bitachon, there's daga, right? When a person has bitachon, then there's no daga. Then there's no worry to have. You know, you got to throw in a little remez at the end of a drasha because a lot of people don't hear the whole rest of the drasha, but they'll remember the Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey. So it's a time that we have to work on our sense of emunah and bitachon, and particularly considering everything Klal Yisrael has been through in the past couple of years, to remind ourselves that there's a reason for everything, there's a plan for everything, and we're not meant to understand everything, but we're meant to continue to be Oved Hashem, because Dag Gzeiras Oraisa.